They're calling it the Big Beautiful Bill, and there's been a lot of work on it in Washington, D.C. on the Senate side, trying to get those votes that they did need. But having said that, how does this all come back to agriculture? Good afternoon. You're listening to the American Ag Network. I'm Susan Littlefield, and Mike Suzzolo is joining us. Mike is with Global Commodity Analytics, and to kind of break this down, really, this bill has had a lot more effect, I think, on the soybeans than it has the corn, Mike.
Yeah, and it started, Susan, with the EPA proposal where the ethanol demand, corn-blended ethanol, actually went down a little bit in the time period between now and 2030, whereas, you know, we had that huge increase in biodiesel, and especially the advanced biodiesel. And so we have crossed a big hurdle with the Senate passing this vote. But I would say the biggest hurdle is yet to come in the House of Representatives. And so I would say to the listener out there in the bean oil and the canola oil, especially, be ready for big, beautiful volatility here in the next 10 days as they try and push this over the finish line in Washington. Because we saw on the trade Tuesday, I think, a very clear pattern of canola leading the soybean oil from being in the red in the case of soybean oil to sharply higher moves of 2 to 2.5% in the deliverable July bean oil contract. And that was thanks to a 3.5 to 4% move up in the canola market. And I think that was directly related to the passage of that bill. And it started to move really and move up sharply as we heard that Vice President Vance was probably going to be able to use the tie-breaking vote to get it across the finish line.
Well, looking at that, if we didn't have that to focus on, would we be focusing more still on the acreage stocks and how the corn condition numbers increased?
Yeah, I really think so, because I think those stocks and acreage numbers were very telling for the soybeans by the stocks being over a billion bushels slightly. While that was within the trade estimates, it was above the average trade guess. And I think it just reiterated the idea that we still got demand issues in the beans for the export market, and we're not sure what's going to happen in the domestic market, because soy meal on Tuesday made a new low, went down its lowest level since April 2016, believe it or not. And the acres weren't much better. Many in the trade colleagues that I work with were thinking bean acres were going to be smaller. I was not part of that group. I just didn't see it because of the difference in planting structure between the Eastern Corn Belt and the Western Corn Belt. So not getting those smaller bean acres, I think, reversed the July no bean spread. We're closing up Tuesday with July beans at 1024 and November beans at 1026. We've actually now built back into the beans a carrying charge after, I think it was just a couple weeks ago, we were 25, 30 cents premium in the July contract.
So looking at the fact that weather is also looming out there, and, you know, I want to kind of rewind about 2.5, 3 weeks ago, Mike, all the weather folks were saying, ooh, it is going to be hot. It's going to be dry into the start of July, and we're going to have issues. Now we are the 1st of July, and they're talking some rain from the Rockies all the way through to the East Coast.
Yeah, I think this is going to be the number one mover of the prices in the next 10 days. I'd set it up this way, Susan. I don't think that we're at that 181 plus or 52 plus national corn and bean yield yet. I think the trade is trying to price that in, especially in the corn, because the trade knows the bean conditions are not nearly as good as the corn, because USDA conditions, as you put it earlier, jumping 3 points puts us at the best good to excellent since 2018, I think. And so we priced out a bigger yield in corn, but the models aren't in agreement right now. And the NOAA 6 to 10 day forecast that came out right after the reports came out on Monday said wetter and not as warm. And not all models are in agreement with that. And I think there is enough dryness in the Western Corn Belt and enough wetness in the Eastern Corn Belt, coupled with that wetness creating some very big vegetative issues on some of the vegetative indexes I keep track of. I think it's going to take 10 good days of weather to get us to those national yields that I think the trade's already pricing in, especially for corn.
What about as we switch gears and look at the livestock, this big drop that we've seen within the cattle complex today?
We almost knew it was going to happen. You and I have talked about it a lot, that the funds probably bought into this market aggressively with the screwworm closing the U.S.-Mexico border and that feeding the cattle bull, the feeding the cattle supply bull. Now that we're opening that up in stages, based upon USDA's latest information, if all goes well, and I think that's a big if. And the other big if is Del Rio and Laredo, Texas, the two biggest ports, are not going to be opened up till mid-September, I believe it is, early to mid-September. We are going to have a tight supply all the way through that. So with that being said, I think it's really up to the funds to decide if they really want to unwind their record long positions, net long positions in the feeders now that this border looks like it's going to open up. If you use the crude oil as a marker or as a template, they did really beat the crude oil up badly once they thought that the Middle East peace was coming and the 12-day war was ending. I wouldn't be surprised to see feeders do that because of the funds and how they play this game. So I'm looking at the monthly lows in the fats and the feeders. That's what I'm going to be talking about this next rest of this week with the clients and subscribers I work with.
And I find it interesting that the New World screwworm and opening up these border spots, yes, it's being talked about in the trade today, but it doesn't have as much of an impact as it kind of had in the ripple effect yesterday.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think also we still have the issue with the packer capacity and backing up nearby supplies, tightening our available supply of meat during a critical time period of the summer grilling season, and then coming on with more supplies probably down the road. And I think that's where the feeder cattle market would suggest the same thing with how the recent auctions have gone. And so it kind of is adding to the pressure of the third quarter and the fourth quarter, especially, I think, Susan, at this stage, whereas we may be able to hold in there with the cash prices pretty nicely for most of July.
Well, thanks so much for your comments and thoughts today. Again, just a reminder, a shortened holiday week this week with Friday being closed for the 4th of July holiday. Mike Zuzulo has been joining us this afternoon. And as always, commodity futures and options do involve a substantial risk of loss, not suitable to all investors. And that's the Tuesday version of the Market Wrap-Up right here on the American Ag Network.